My name's Jerry B. I'm physically located in a suburb of Las Vegas called Henderson, and I'm really glad to be here. I've been looking forward to it. I have been going over these traditions and thinking, do I really have anything to say about these? But I remember when I first started being able to talk at meetings, thinking I had nothing to say, you know, and then they'd have to shut me up. We've probably all had some similar experiences. Anyway, I guess I'll just jump right in. I wanted to, I think that being as familiar as possible with the traditions for people who are secular, as we are here in this meeting, that is really one of the things that can help if you find yourself in other meetings. I personally got sober in mainstream AA for, you know, 20 years. I found a secular in 2014, so whatever that was. Anyway, somewhere in my 20th set of numbers there. And I didn't have any trouble. One of the things that I've discussed, that I know, is that AA meetings reflect their community. And so if you're in a meeting in maybe a small suburb of Atlanta, you're going to find meetings are a lot different than in, say, a small suburb of San Francisco, like Berkeley, California. The meeting just is going to reflect the community. And I think having an understanding of that helped me anyway in understanding who the people are in any given meeting. Anyway, I'm not here to talk about that. I'm here to talk about the traditions of AA. So when they finished writing the big book, actually during the writing of the big book, they had a lot of conflict between the two main groups, which were in New York and in Akron in Ohio. And to the extent that communication, they had telephones, but they didn't seem to use them very much. They wrote letters back and forth, or they had physical visits back and forth. And they were able to work out whatever disagreements they had simply because Bill Wilson had a big personality and pushed it on through. Maybe not simply, but that's the way it happened. So during the years after the publication, when the place exploded with inquiries and people starting meetings, and if you've had a chance to read some of the history of early AA meetings, I remember one thought that they would come together for the purpose of drinking, and central office had to send somebody down there and explain to them. Yeah, so the traditions came out of learning how these two main groups were going to get along. And then as the new groups started around the country, they would write letters into New York and say, this group is doing that, or our group is doing this. So they decided they needed to come up with some codification of AA as a whole. And I personally think that what they came up with is pretty brilliant. So this is was published in, in 1950. Again, some of the language will reflect that. But just to get into the traditions themselves, the first tradition talks about our common welfare, and it describes us as a group of anarchists. And that was why we need the group, because instead of going all our own way, we have to commit to understanding that if the group doesn't survive, then us individuals won't. There's an AA-approved pamphlet, if you haven't seen it. It's the illustrated version of AA, the traditions. And I personally love it. I'm sure you can't see this too well. I just wanted to hold it up a little bit. And it shows literally illustrated of how, as it says, that our common welfare should come first. And it's got a picture of a whole bunch of people sitting on a tree, and the guy closest to the trunk is sawing off that limb. And so trying to illustrate that we all have to hold our hands together to hold AA together. And as I said, I think that these would be one of the most important things for us to be familiar with as secular AA people. So personal recovery depends upon AA unity, because if the group doesn't survive, then the individual will not. And that is the message that they have. So in terms of, you know, everyday life, I think I have found myself applying it to my work situation, and most importantly to my marriage. And we'll all get into that down the road a little bit. So, but any given group that I have belonged to since I got sober, understanding what is the purpose of the group and what are our goals and how are we going to get there together, and respecting everybody and bringing all of those tenets of AA into that. Megan asked me to talk about bringing these things into our lives. One of the things that this is Recovering Couples Anonymous, which is where another place that they brought not only the steps, but the traditions. This is Debtors Anonymous. Those are the things that helped me get 30 some odd years of sobriety, because it gave me tools to live in my life. And they all came out of the big book and the 12 and 12. So yeah, so first tradition, the reason that our common welfare comes first, because otherwise the whole thing will fall apart and won't be here. And the things that we have the responsibility to maintain the group. And that's why what Megan is doing in running this book, and what Rose is doing in helping facilitate today, what any of us do, whether we work at central office, any little thing helps. And if one doesn't have time for that, then there are other things that that we can do, if only maybe give a little contribution once in a while to central office, answer the phone. So those are all things within AA. Outside of AA, how I said I applied it, I have applied it in the groups that that I would facilitate through the various jobs that I had. And in particular, when I was a supervisor, and bringing that feeling to my team that we have to work together if we're going to have a successful day. That each person in that team had that responsibility. It wasn't just to sit back. Just bring that idea to the table every day, or not every day, but every meeting that we would have. One of the things before I move on in the first tradition is that no AA can compel another to do anything. No one can be punished or expelled. And I know that sometimes that's an issue in some meetings. And again, being an expert in the traditions can be helpful sometimes. Number two is one of those that hangs up a lot of us, having one ultimate authority. Let me read the exact words. For the group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, and they do not govern. So I handle this the way I handle the 12 steps. For me, what is that ultimate authority? And for me, the ultimate authority is the group conscience. So it's pretty pretty easy. And I rely on that, the group conscience. And so that is the same thing that I use in my work environment and in my relationship. And how do you have a group conscience when there's only two of you? Sometimes it's that you have to listen to each other. And sometimes you have to talk. And sometimes you get a third person involved. And that's the way that I applied it to my relationship and in my work situation. As I said, it was involving the people in my group. And I learned this from AA. I didn't come in as a supervisor. I came in as a dead end drunk at 40 years old. Through AA, I went back to school, worked my way up, and became the supervisor. So it was the training in AA that enabled me to get where I was with that particular thing. So I just simply talk about the second tradition, think about the second tradition as what is the group conscience? And that's a vote. Sometimes that's an up and down vote, but that's the only way that we can move forward. And sometimes, again, because it depends on what community you're in, I may not agree with the group conscience. I was with a group for a long time that every single annual group conscience that we had, group meeting that they had an annual meeting. A fellow would get up and he would request that we not say the Lord's Prayer. And there would be a vote, and there would be, he got to talk again, which is a tradition in AA. And then we voted again, and it got voted down every single time. But he got up there every single time, year, and kept requesting that and having reasons. And I moved, so I don't know if they ever changed that. But again, it was his right. Nobody made fun of him or anything. It was his right at his business meeting to do that. One of the traditions about having that vote that they do in AA, if you've ever been involved in like general service, which is a step above the meeting, business meetings, is that once you have that vote, people talk, you have a vote, whichever side loses gets a second time to talk and try and make their case. Not to beat someone over the head, but to just one more last time say, these are the points that I want to make. And then they vote again. And I have seen that second vote turn around the first vote. And not always, not even all the time, but I have seen it. And I think what it does is it gives the minority opinion the understanding that at least they are heard out there and they get their chance to talk. And I think in any situation that the people in a minority in that situation, one of the big things is they want to know that they are heard. They may not win, but if they are heard, then they are much more likely to keep participating in the whatever organization is going on. I have a note under that that one of the things is that good is the enemy of the best. Like I've heard that phrase a lot, and somehow I attached it to this in my notes. That one of the being a perfectionist, I'm not always happy with some in between compromise, and that I have to remember that my goal of having the best or the ultimate is really the enemy of getting anything done sometimes. So. Let's see, moving on to tradition three. Let's somewhere here. There we go. So in the third tradition, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Again, this is about the individual is the only one that can say whether they are an alcoholic or not. And the only requirement for anyone to be in an AA meeting is that they have a desire to stop drinking. I have been in meetings with people who were obviously drunk. And I have been in meetings where people didn't want somebody in the meeting because either they were obviously had been drinking, or perhaps they were living on the streets and coming in and not following what we might consider a dress code for some meetings. And but the only requirement for membership that we talk about is that desire to stop drinking. And if someone has a desire, we as a group cannot tell them to leave. I had one group, however, boy, this was a rough one, where the person involved in this who kept getting drunk, the landlord where the meeting was held and paid rent, did not want that particular person on their premises any longer. And so that really stirred up a lot in the meeting itself, because we didn't want to lose our lease. And so how do we apply our principles of having that the only requirement from this person, as far as we were concerned, was that he had a desire to stop drinking? Could we keep him out of the meeting? As I recall, what they did is they made a deal with the landlord. Again, this is involved in keeping communications open. I think that's one of the things that traditions definitely would have in mind to do. So in that particular case, what they did is they had an agreement that one AA person would be the monitor of the one who was not allowed. He could come into the meeting, come into the building so that he could join the meeting. And then he would be escorted out and off the premises to be in compliance with what the landlord wanted. So that in that case, that worked out. But there was a lot of negotiation that had to go on about that. While there were some people in there that were just fine with, okay, he's a pain in the ass, we're happy to be rid of him. And then other people would quite rightly bring up who we are as AA and what our responsibility is. And it's not to keep someone out of a meeting who at least states that they want to be in that meeting. So it can get a little dicey sometimes. What else? What do I have? Oh, about AA reflecting the community. I think in the big book, it talks about I have here Ed the Atheist, and now I don't remember what that reference is. But I do know that this only requirement is one of the strong things that we as secular people can lean on if we're getting any flack at meetings or if we're being asked to change something that we individually are doing. And I recommend a study of that that particular tradition, because they're all meant for us all to get along and not to tell each other what to do. Not always easy. Okay, the fourth tradition. Each group should be autonomous, except in, what are the exact words here? Should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. I like this, I like the keep it simple part of the being autonomous. That means we can be the type of meeting we want to be. We can be a speaker meeting. We can be a sharing meeting. We can be a eat lunch every afternoon meeting. We can be 15 minutes long. We can be an hour and a half long. We can have a break. We could still be a smoking meeting if that is what the group conscience decides. So we're autonomous in everything that we want to do, so long as we have as our primary purpose to stay sober and help another alcoholic. And so again, that leads to some slippery slopes, as you might imagine. And again, if you've had the chance to read some of the early literature, I think, what is it, Pass It On, and there's another one that Bill wrote about some of the adventures they had when they were first getting new meetings together and trying to decide what they should be. But in the autonomy of, I'm sorry, I've lost my train of thought. Whether we have a big group or a little group or a smoking meeting or a non-smoking meeting or an eating meeting or a not eating meeting. Again, that's all back to that we should be adhering to our group conscience. It's what the group wants to do that would prevail. And one person being more bombastic or not is not going to help us maintain our unity, maintain the ultimate goal of any AA meeting, which is to stay sober and help another alcoholic. So we each get to be autonomous. So that, for me, brings it back around to AA reflecting the community. And while I can get up at any given business meeting and perhaps say, I would suggest we not say the Lord's Prayer because we are limiting ourselves. If the group does not want to do that, the group gets to have that privilege. And I get to, because we live in an age of technology, I get to jump on Zoom meetings, you know, if that's the way it is. But my responsibility is to continue to be a member of that group and maybe prick their conscience once in a while, but not to the point of my way or the highway, because that does not help anybody, in my opinion. All of this is my opinion. Did I say that at the beginning? I hope I did. So I have in each group should be autonomous. I wrote that this has to do with rule 62, which is also to keep it simple as possible. But I made a note that said, well, if this is rule 62, that means there were 61 rules before that, you know, and what were those rules? I think those were the rules that new central office in the 50s had to deal with, that no, we don't have dress codes, no, we don't have this or that in terms of AA as a whole. Our job is to stay sober and help another alcoholic. And if your group is doing that, you know, you can call yourself an AA group. So then moving on to the next tradition, which is the fifth tradition, which reads in exact words, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. So one of the things about carrying the message, this is the core of how the big book got written, in my opinion. And as I understand it, you know, in 1936 or 37, if you were a drunk anywhere in this country, you basically got kicked to the curb or you got kicked into an asylum. End of story. You got sobered up and kicked back out. It was in the Bill Wilson talking to Dr. Bob as a fluke introduction when he was down there in Akron one day, that they discovered some months later, when they were talking a lot, they were talking every day, that they were staying sober. And the only thing that they could come up with was that they were talking to each other. So they knew that that worked. But that was where they sort of decided that nothing else had worked. It had to have been some kind of higher power. It had to have been God. Because nothing before, well, very little before AA had worked for people. So I think the fact that they came to that conclusion of that God had blessed them was, again, a function of them being in the United States, in the atmosphere of the country where they were. But also what they figured out was it was one person identifying with the other. One person identifying with the other, and that was what had worked. But how to codify that? That was one of the problems that they came up with. And that's where they came up with the singleness of purpose. Was they thought, well, we'll build hospitals, or we'll start our own religion. But at the end of the 4 or 5 years of trying to analyze and figure out what had really worked, it was the identification of one alcoholic talking to the other and saying, I understand. I've been there. I know what it's like to crave that drink and what it's like to take that swallow and feel it go down and have everything change. I know that feeling. And so the one alcoholic talking to the other. And so they came up with their primary purpose is to identify the problem for the person that they're talking to, who may not have understood that. Did I read it? I don't think I did. Each group has but one primary purpose: to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Back to Bill and Bob, once they identified, and this took some time, that it was in them sharing with each other. And with Bill, there were a couple of other people in New York that he had success with from that, from sharing and working together. So they wanted to start hospitals, they decided against that. They wanted to start their own religion, they decided against that. And they decided that that was why that one of the reasons that they knew they had to write a book, so that they could give their experiences on exactly what they did to have this miracle happen of being able to stay sober. And that's where the fifth tradition came up with, that's the singleness of purpose. Again, I use this in my various jobs to reframe sometimes, like, what is the purpose of this group? What is the purpose? Is it a volunteer group to help kids? Is it, what is our marching orders in this group? Because sometimes when you're in a group, in a business setting or in a volunteer setting, there are a lot of great ideas out there and everybody's going in different directions. Sometimes the way I use this tradition in those situations is just to pull it all in. Okay, what does our charter say? What are we here to do? And that can help to refocus a given group. Everyone write down what is the purpose of the group. And that's a good exercise. You'd be surprised how many different ideas of what any given group is for, or what the goals are. and then to boil that all down. So that was one of the ones that I used in some of the volunteer work that I've done over the years to help reframe. Now, what are we doing? We're off in left field here. Let's pull it back. And again, for AA, what it was is that legacy of us. We've all suffered under the tyrant alcohol, but there's another word. Doesn't matter. All right, we're moving on to tradition six. I didn't think I'd fill up so much time. All right. Never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facilities or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Similar idea of that they had wanted. They wanted J.D. Rockefeller to give them a bunch of money and that they would then build these hospitals and start saving the world. And in those ideas was born the mostly what I just talked about was that money was not the answer. They had found the answer. The answer was in one alcoholic talking to another. The primary purpose, as restated in this particular tradition, is that we're all in the lifeboat together, and we have to remember who we are as a little individual group here, and how we relate to AA as a whole, and how we perform our primary purpose. Do we reach out to other people? There's a a pamphlet, I believe it is. I should have looked that up. That each group can do a group inventory. If you have never done a group inventory in the group that you are most associated with, you might look into that sometime, because it really asks some very, very interesting questions, like, as an AA group, are we welcoming? Do we notice the new person that comes in? Do we have someone designated to go shake hands if you're big enough for something like that? Oh, we don't shake hands anymore. But anyway, what we used to do, what we virtually do when someone's new face at a meeting, do we have people who say, hey, haven't seen you before, welcome? Things like that. So there is a format for the group to go through a type of inventory for the group to answer. And where am I at? Six? Yeah. So never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name, because of our primary purpose is the individual to stay sober and help the next individual. So this comes up sometimes, I think, in our secular work, where been accused of saying this is an outside issue. Again, I encourage you all to be familiar with the AA traditions, because they will really help in having things to say when people are saying that's something's an outside issue. Maybe a group conscience can decide to say the Lord's Prayer at the end. The outside issue would be that, I don't believe in God, so I'm not going to say it. That's my choice. The group can still say it, obviously. And it's my choice to step outside the group and not hold hands. I get to have that also. So it is not, there's nothing in this tradition, to my knowledge, it hasn't come up. How am I doing for time? In case, just quickly, when in, 2013 or so, I know that there was one group, it was not in the United States, it was in another country, that the local intergroup refused to list this particular group in their listing of AA meetings, saying it wasn't an AA meeting because they were secular. They didn't say the Lord's Prayer, whatever they didn't do. And that particular issue went all the way to the main court of that country in a lawsuit kind of thing. And they went to General Service Office in New York. And that was kind of the beginning of our secular movement, was that particular group finally standing up and saying that we were not going against the sixth tradition by saying, not we, I wasn't there, people who wanted, that were starting this secular meeting, were still an AA group, and they were not lending their name to some, you know, hospital or institution religion or some even non-religion. They were still an AA group, and they had to list. They lost that lawsuit. The central office there lost that lawsuit, and that was kind of the beginning of what we have here today with all these wonderful secular AA meetings. Anyway, I guess I don't have much else to say about that. That's why there aren't, that hospitals should not have, Alcoholics Anonymous on their buildings. I don't have much to say about that. Then the next one is self-supporting, that AA should be self-supporting. And as you probably know, there are rules in our General Service Office about how much someone can leave in their will, for instance, to AA, and it's limited. And again, going back to the founders, they were afraid that money would ruin the organization, because what they knew was what worked was one alcoholic talking to another. And what worked with the group is the group supporting the individuals who would be talking to other individuals, bringing them into sobriety, and that is what worked, and they wanted to stick to that. But one of the things that comes up sometimes is, what about paying someone to run a room? So if a custodian takes care, cleans up, takes care of the room, do they get paid from the AA treasury? There are groups that are big enough that have huge coffee pots and a huge room, and they have meetings every day. And so they do pay someone to keep it clean, to run the group. That is not against the traditions. That is fair compensation for somebody's work. Now, that doesn't mean that the rest of the group doesn't help. They do. But when you have that kind of a situation, you have two or three meetings a day from one group, they certainly have a right to be compensated, and the group is not breaking any traditions by doing that. I'm trying to think. I guess I don't really have that in my everyday life. I can't remember it so much, except that I try to be fair. I was with a friend of mine yesterday who recently bought a house, and she was talking about that she was fair with her workers, and she was all along, and now there's a little problem. And she's saying, I've been fair with you all along. I've paid you well. I've paid every time. And but I want this fixed. This is not what we agreed on. And it was interesting to me to see her standing up for herself, and but not being, bitchy, just in that spirit of that fair compensation, that it is even in AA, it is fair to pay someone if They are doing work that otherwise would not be, get done. Tradition 8 is Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Well, that's some of what I just talked about, but also that AA is non-professional. I was a nurse and I worked in recovery for part of my career. And our doctor, the head of the department, would come around regularly. How are you doing? You going to meetings? You know, working here is not your program. And that was a message that I needed to get, because I would go home after dealing with alcoholics in early recovery on a detox ward, and I did not want to talk to another new person, believe me. But I heard the message that, you know, working there was not my program. And so I had to find meetings that I could go to, that I could be honest with, and that I could, you know, do my bitching about as a who I was, and not, but not withdraw from my responsibilities in AA to continue to help another alcoholic stay sober. Although, you know, pretty much I have to admit, it felt like that's what I was doing a lot of the time and getting paid for it. But he was pretty emphatic about it. This is not your program. And I think that, where is it? Yeah, the non-professional. The ninth step is that we ought never be organized. This is a joke around AA rooms. You know, there is like no danger of us being organized. And many of my meetings are like that, no danger of being organized. But there are some that are pretty organized. And, you know, I saw Mikey here a minute ago. The Oh My God meetings are pretty organized. And there are a lot of them that are pretty organized. But what it goes back around to is that we are subject to our group conscience. And so, and we are subject to what they call an upside down pyramid. So this is where they talk about that the groups run the show. So there is no president. What happens is, if any given group has an issue, I want a pamphlet that talks about getting sober without God. They can push that up the chain of command. It may take more than one to push, but they have that right. And if they doesn't work, they get to do it again the next year. That the rules do not come down from the top. They get that the issues don't come down from the top. They get pushed up from any group. So sometimes when we're talking about like the God pamphlet, it's not new anymore. It was a blue cover that came out of England initially. And when it came to the United States for us to adopt it, there was some resistance, as you might imagine. But it went from individual, it went down to the individual groups to talk about. And each group got to vote on that and send it on back. And eventually, it got accepted and worked. On the 10th tradition, no opinion on outside issues. Oh, thank God for that, so to speak. that we can keep outside issues outside. We're here to stay sober, to talk about our sobriety or our struggle with sobriety. But we don't get to get on a soapbox and talk about politics or even religion. That you know, we're not really supposed to do that. And again, I suggest you become familiar with the different aspects of the traditions to help you with if you are in the situations like that. So the tradition in AA is that the outside issues stay outside. And in any given group that I've had experience with, I have used that more than once. We're here to work on, you know, a new way to organize XYZ. We are not here to talk about what even the big bosses are doing or whether they're going to open another branch. We're here to do this. Let's stay focused on what our job is. And I think that having no opinion on outside issues keeps us focused on why we're in any individual AA meeting, which is, you know, for our own sobriety, for the sobriety. Okay. Okay. So the 11th tradition is attraction, not promotion. This is, we try, you know, the story is that, you know, there was a famous, I think it was a fighter or a wrestler. He got sober. He was told the whole world or as much of the world as he could in 1938. And then he turned around and got drunk. And so, oh my God, AA doesn't work. So that was one of the reasons that they had the, we're here for attraction, not promotion. And so they're still pretty good about it at the level of press, radio, films, and TV, I guess. But, you know, like I got sober in LA. We saw stars in meetings all the time. Tried not to make a fuss of it, but you know, it is what it is, and you do the best you can. Let's see, was there something else about that? Attraction, not promotion. So if anybody asks me personally about, I don't hesitate to say that I'm in AA, but I don't announce it. I might tell someone if I hear they're struggling with something. You know, if you ever want to go to a meeting, you know, I go sometimes, you know, something like that. That's how I have used that one. Oh my God, and 12, I guess that's the same. The spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. So we've had some pretty strong personalities in AA. I got sober in LA. That's where, you know, Clancy, for some of you who've ever heard him, he was a strong personality around there. He had his own little group that, his own big group. But you know what? They were doing, they were saving lives just like we were. And, you know, it's not up to me to criticize that. What I do with my anonymity, as I said, was, I don't advertise it, but if it comes up, I don't deny it either. I didn't write one note about how that would apply outside of AA, but I'm sure that there are you know, times that I wouldn't necessarily say that, you know, I was a nurse on the detox floor. Not important, you know, except for my ego. Sometimes, or that I was a supervisor, or that blah, 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 blah. And so it's just maybe when I do my daily inventory that I could look at, you know, where have I been trying to be a big shot or not. Anyway, I think I talked far more than I meant to. And that's all I got to say on the traditions.